Okay. Last night we talked about what I call proper hashkafa ke'ilu, attitude towards agadata, and even when we don't understand, and inevitably people like us, and I believe almost anyone today, is going to have divrei agadata that they're not able to make sense out of. So what's the proper attitude? So that we saw Rambam talks about it in a number of places. We have to assume that there's a deep message there that we're not getting. And the reason we don't get it is our lacking, not Chas V'Shalom Chazal's lacking. And that's what I say, is that message of the Rambam's, I think even those who don't agree with everything else the Rambam said, I'm confident would heartily agree with that statement. We also try to discuss in a first technical, more halachic point, added to, you know, from halachic point, the issue of kfira. In other words, there's a concept of kfira with Torah Shemal Peh. Of course, in halachic parts of Torah, it's a lot clearer and easier to define when a person over the line, without getting bogged down in details. Because you could, I don't want to get bogged down, you know, like in source details in a shiur like this, because I just don't want to do that. So I definitely believe, even though it's not nearly as black and white, but I definitely believe that if a person has a distinct lack of value for Chazal, that they're, you know, playing with fire, as it could be said. And they're playing with fire, and it definitely is possible to end up with a kfira attitude in such a thing. Now, I don't, you know, Akiva raised a point which I'm not really going to attack now properly, and this is a point, and the point is a valid point. We are living in a world of very deep skepticism, etc., 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 and we certainly have to work on emuna in a significant fashion. It's not something it's something that a person has to work on. And I don't think it's, you know, if you were not given the gift of, you know, a very, what we call, solid base, then it's going to be more of a challenge. Of course, even being given the gift of a solid base doesn't guarantee anything, because that's how Olam Hazeh works. So, here, should I tell you this? I'll tell you a story of Chaim Shapiro. You ever heard of Chaim Shapiro? He wrote a book called Go, My Son. Go, My Son, Once Upon a Shtetl. You've read any of his books?
No.
Okay. His youngest son's an old friend of mine, and I actually heard some of the key stories before they were printed, but very fascinating, interesting book. Anyway, Chaim Shapiro has the following story. Chaim Shapiro was a yeshiva bachur back in the 30s, and to make a long story short, he was running, and his mother told him to run away to communist Russia, which he did, and he was the only family member. All of his immediate family died in the Holocaust. Whatever, I could sort of guess when it happened, but it's not so important. I could basically guess when everything happened, because as a Holocaust historian, I can tell you basically when they died, but it's not so important. So he was running around Russia. He was hoping to join the Red Army, the Russian army, to fight the Nazis, and not successful. So finally, later in the war, when the Russians were getting together a Polish brigade that they planned and they did use to take control of Poland after the war, he was allowed to join that. And in an irony, even though he had been in yeshiva, but because he hadn't gone to high school, he was not considered bourgeois, and he was therefore allowed to join an officer's training corps, officer's training school. Because they wanted, we were communists, and they didn't want any bourgeois, they didn't want anybody middle class or rich to be part of the ruling, the future ruling of Poland. But they allowed Chaim Shapiro, because Chaim Shapiro had not gone to high school. He had gone to yeshiva. Okay. So, he has the following run-in there. He had a run-in with a political officer. Political officer was the communist version of a chaplain. Except for his religion was communism. Marxism. So he suspected that Chaim believed in God. So he said, he called a meeting, and the meeting was all about Chaim. Should he become an officer or not? And the political officer says, you can't become an officer, he believes in God. You can't have anyone who believes in God become an officer in the Red Army. Chas v'shalom. So they ask him, Nu Chaim, do you believe in God or not? So Jews, being Jewish, being very Jewish, he doesn't answer him straight. He says like this. He says, in Poland, before the war broke out, and Muna was served up in the Jewish houses. It was like part of daily fare. So in some houses, they served it by the spoonful. In some houses, they served it by the cupful. In my house, they served it by the bucketful. Okay, so all I can tell you is that's a real blessing. Anyone who has that has a good core to lie back, to stand back on. And that's a real bracha. If we don't, those of us who don't, or if we only got a spoonful and not a bucketful, then we have to work on it, and we shouldn't expect instantaneous results. And you're obligated to keep on pushing and keep on trying and working on it. And that's a different topic, which I'm not going to speak about right now. I have a lot to say about it, but that is not what's going on right now.
Would you like some water?
Thank you for the offer. No. Tonight, I want to talk about, before we get into Torah and science, which I hope we'll get to tonight, I want to talk about a different aspect of Masorah issues, of what we call the Masorah. And it's an important topic. It's part of the Munas Chachamim. Yeah.
May I ask why we're doing this like mini non-Torah series?
I thought people were interested in it.
Yeah, no, very much.
That's why we're doing it, because
no, very
exactly. You're the one who said I should do it.
Everyone suggested to this extent. I assume science and Torah.
Well, we're not going to talk about. I'm not going to get down to principles.
That's the biggest question of all time. I've had that question for a long time now.
Okay, just because a person always perceives their own questions as being the biggest, but
because I have.
Okay. Everyone has something that bothers them.
Well, fine.
Okay. So there's another aspect of Masorah I want to talk about. Before we go on to Torah and science, there's another aspect of Torah I want to talk about, and that is, it's also deeply related to Munas Chachamim. And that is, it's very important to understand that basic Torah methodology is unchanged. Basic Torah methodology that we have today is largely unchanged since Maimon Har Sinai. Now, largely unchanged. How do we know this? So the answer is the Rambam says so.
So I know everything.
Well, that's how we know everything, isn't it? Yeah, it's fascinating. Where is the Rambam saying this? The Rambam says in the Hakdamah to Perush Mishnah the following statement. You certainly should.
He says everything.
It's a very important. The Hakdamah to Perush Mishnah is very, very important. I had a 610 on it 5 years ago. I have all the shiurim recorded. I'm happy if you can.
Was that the one we were supposed to have this year, or not?
No, that was not the one we were supposed to have. We were going to do. That's a Jonah Chayla. Yeah, I did that with Zach instead. The Rambam says. The same way what Ravina and Rav Ashi did, that's the same thing that Yeshua and Kalev did. What Ravina and Rav Ashi did in learning, it's the same style of learning as Yeshua and Kalev. That's what the Rambam says. And what the Rambam means by that is don't think the Torah methodology changed. And the Rambam has a different, big maracha. And it's a good question who he's trying to argue with, even though I did find a Rishon who argues with him. But it's like this sort of obscure Rishon in a very obscure place after the Rambam. So you can't tell me the Rambam meant to argue with this person because whatever. But obviously the idea was out there. And that is there are people who think, for whatever reasons, that in the Tekufa, in the era of Nevuah, that learning was different and very deeply influenced by Nevuah. And the Rambam is coming to fight that tooth and nail and to the Adasof. The Rambam says, if you paskin al pi Nevuah, you chayav misa. That is right. The Rambam's shita is if a navi would say a psak al pi nevuah, he's chayav misa because he's a navi sheker.
As in, he gets a nevuah and says, like, let's say he gets a nevuah that says you should change the halacha to this.
So the Rambam says that it is not possible for a navi to get that. It is Torah's not b'shamayim. And by definition, he cannot get such a nevuah, and therefore, if he says it, he's chayav misa.
Is that true? No navi has ever brought that
mishah. Okay, so the Rambam is not an Amma Aretz. Let me put it this way. And there's obviously nowhere in Tanakh, Shas, and Mainline Midrashim that could be used to refute this Rambam that I'm aware of. Anyway, but the point for us is. The point for us is this Torah methodology is largely unchanged, and that creates a type of Masara, and we're going to get to the last step of this whole thing is going to be talking about which Maimari Chazal are absolute Masara, absolute Kabbalah. This is Mamish Ish Mipi Ish from Moshe Rabbeinu. There are certain things, yes, we know 100% Ish Mipi Ish from Moshe Rabbeinu, and other things they're not. We don't know. And certain things, I can promise you, we're not from Moshe Rabbeinu. It doesn't mean they're not Daraisa. It doesn't mean Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say it. It just means he didn't bother saying it down afterwards, and it wasn't passed down. The Rambam does not source everything, ki yadua, and one of the proofs to the Rambam, and the reason why the Rambam understands this, is from a Gemara in Brachas, in the third or fourth Perek, talking about Shmuel, saying a chiddush about shchitas karbonos, and without getting bogged down in the details, the point of what is of the Rambam of what you see from that Gemara is that Torah methodology and the concept of chiddushei Torah is not a new concept. It's a concept which always existed. It's a concept that always existed. And the Rambam understands it's implicit in Shas from that Agadata and others that the core of Torah methodology is it's Misinai, yes and no. In other words, it's implicit in how you have to learn Torah. The core of Torah methodology structurally putting halacha together is implicit. It's implicit in the Torah. Now, there's another place we sort of see this, and that is like this. And this is again, this is. There's another place we see this. It's like this. The Rambam also says in the Hakdamah to the Parashat Mishnah, and I'm not. There's still plenty of good quotes that if you go and learn it, you can find. He also says that there is a principle in Torah that we put value on the people who came before us, and there is a law in Shas. There's an absolute law in Shas. The law of Shas states that an Amora cannot argue with a Tana. That's law. Garagar Kronos is when you have two Shitas in the Mishnah and you say, you can't ask Rabbi Yehuda from Rabbi Meir. But if an Amora says a theory, a Torah theory, and we could disprove it from Mishnah, Mishnaic, Tanoic material, Right? Correct? We could just move it from a Mishnah or a Brisa, etc. And there's no Shita amongst the Tanoim who holds that way, then that Amor is considered completely disproven and discarded and non-halach. It's implicit. One second. You got that? That's clear. This is Aleph Beis. This is Aleph Beis of how Shas works. The Mishnah is Kodesh Kedoshim. The Mishnah and Brisa are Kodesh Kedoshim, and the Moraim do not have, they are not on that level. Now, it's sort of like this. You cannot quite see what we call Talmudic methodology for Mishnah. You don't quite see it there. A little bit here and there, yeah, a little bit, but you can't really see it. But from the fact that the Amoraim, without exception, and Torah, without exception, we consider Mishnah to be, you know, can disprove anything that an Amora says, and we consider Shas to be the body of Hachra, what proves something. Halakha Lamaisa, what proves something to us is what it says in Shas. That's an extension of that. That shows, you understand what I mean? In other words, you want to say something. A Rishon says something, this says something, that says something. The ultimate proof is always from Shas. That is the ultimate proof. Okay, today we treat Yishonim almost the way we treat Shas. But that's a different issue. No, let's not worry about that right now. But the point of all this is Talmudic methodology is absolutely clear from Shas. What Tosis is doing, Begadol, is applying Talmudic methodology to Shas itself. Like, you think like this over here, but what about the other Gemara over there? He's just applying, he's reapplying the way Shas examines things to Shas itself. That's what Tosis is doing. And that's where all the Rishonim, Be'iklus Tosis, are all going with that. And okay, the early Rishonim understood it also, but they just don't speak about it quite as explicitly. So, the point of all this is obviously the Amoraim didn't invent it, because if they would have, then they would have considered themselves superior to Mishnah, not inferior to Mishnah. The methodology was always obvious, always there. Because if not, that is a absolute law of complete law of human nature. If I invent something, and I'm the one who thinks it up, then I'm the biggest expert in it. Okay, now that just is a very slight divergence. And the slight divergence is like this. There's a difference in the way that expertise in Torah affects a person and expertise in another topic affects a person. There's a difference. Now, I'm not going to tell you, as we say, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to record this, but I'm going to anyway. I'm not going to tell you. I do unfortunately know people who know a lot more than me. I wouldn't call them low characters. I just would say that you would expect more from a person who knows that much. That's all I would say. If you understand what I mean. I don't know. No one here met Rabbi David's brother. Have you? You never met the Rosh Hashiva's brother? He says a father to the Shana Bet guys. Okay, he's Tzaddik, he's a real, quite a Tzaddik figure, as is well known fact. And it's, life is complicated, so I don't want to sidetrack too much. But Torah, when it's properly learned, and an implicit and prerequisite for Torah properly affecting a person is something called Yerushalayim. It affects a person in a very, very different way than a person who is, you know, acquires immense amounts of wisdom in other top parts of life, etc., etc. It creates, see, Torah, as it says in Avos and other places, it has very positive effects on a person in a way that other Chachmah doesn't. Other Chachmah will lead to arrogance, etc., etc. That's just the nature of life. If a person's an expert in something, that makes them feel good. I mean, it's an accomplishment, you know, an accomplishment. And you know, as the Rambam says, and he's echoing the Greek philosophers, that man, what makes man man, is our mind. And therefore, the greatest human accomplishment is an accomplishment in your mind. That's what the Rambam says clearly. That's why I'm almost 100% sure. That's why the scientific term for man is Homo sapiens. A thinking being. That's why that's the term. So anyway, the kitzur, Torah does affect a person differently, and that is reflective of what Torah really is. It's just not to finally conclude our Masara Amunas Chacham issue without getting to again the details. Some of the details I want to leave off till later to conclude this part of this is the following statement. We're aware of Samuel Clemens' famous quote about the Jews. We've heard that one.
Mark Twain.
I mean Samuel Clemens. Yes, Mark, also known as Mark Twain.
There's a whole
essay. It's two paragraphs in it. It's two paragraphs. Bekitzer, Clemens was accused of anti-Semitism. And so he wrote back a public essay saying he's definitely not anti-Semitic. And approximately, I didn't have the time to look it up. I have it saved on my computer because every so often you need to send it to someone as the official quote. And it approximately goes, it approximately reads the following way. You know, the Greeks came, the Babylonians, the Greeks, the Romans, they all came, they made all their noise, they rose and they fell, and they're long gone and long forgotten about. But not the Jews. The Jews are always there. They're always there, and they're always maintaining their vitality. What's the secret? What's their secret? So you know, let me tell you what the secret of the Jews is. The secret of the Jews is Torah. Because Kudsha Baruch Hu V'Raisa Yisrael Chad Hu, and the secret, what gives Jews vitality throughout the Doros, throughout the generations, is Torah. Because Torah is alive. It's alive being Kihen Chayenu Va'orech Yameinu. Torah is alive. And when we're going with the Masara, as we say, and even the parts of Torah that I could show you things that I say Rashi was a Mechadosh this. Well, yes and no. It's a tweak on an earlier Midrash, yes. But at the end of the day, it's Rashi's Chiddush. There is no known source. I can show you right now something that Midrashim say something similar, but Rashi comes in with his, like what I call his, he does microsurgery on Midrashim and chops and cuts and glues and pastes. Unbelievably, Rashi's Chiddush. But it's in consonance and a flow out of the Maseres HaTorah, out of the traditionalist way to look at things, and Rashi is coming and putting his piece on it, and when we're connected to that, we're connected to a flow of Torah, which is very important. We're going to come back to this Sunday. Because I want to diverge and talk about what the real problem is all here. And the real problem is science and Torah. The real problem that we like grasp and are bothered by is science and time. Yeah, okay. And we're doing good. Okay, I don't want to go to give a, you know, to do a, what do we call, thorough, proper job would be a very, it would take me a long time. I'd have to look over Rabbi Maslin's book to see what he has to say about it. Yeah, we only have 15 minutes. So let's just, I want to go through what I consider basically the Rosh Prakim of the issues and say my opinion also. Okay, first I'm going to start by telling you the following story, which I heard from a very accurate source. And I have to ask Rabbi David if I told him this story. It's a great story. Okay. One of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's granddaughters married a guy who has a doctorate in physics. He's a very frum guy. He's a Rosh Kollel. He lives in Harnuf. Very frum guy. Okay, whatever. It's a whole story. It's a long story. It's a long story. But she married a guy who was a doctor in physics from Berkeley. Okay?
Not a fan of God.
Oh, no, this guy's really, oh, well, you mean Berkeley. Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, fine. So he had the following conversation with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. This is a conversation he had with Rabbi Yaakov. And I heard it from someone who heard it from him. He was learning by him, and he told me over the following conversation. Okay, conversation. Who knew more about science? The Chazon Ish or Einstein. Who knew more about science? Reb Chaim or Einstein. Who keeps going back? The Vilna Gaon, Einstein. The Beis Yosef, the Arizal, Einstein.
Who's answering this?
Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Who knew? The Rambam or Einstein? Einstein. Okay, let's go. Let's say Rabbi Rav Ashi or Einstein? Einstein. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi or Einstein? Einstein. Let's see. Shaya or Einstein? Einstein. Shlomo Melch or Einstein?
Ooh.
Einstein. That I was surprised by. But that the ones up until there, I'm not sure which every single step was. But the important ones which are Shomach or Einstein? Einstein. I said, yeah, he said that. Yeah, he said that. Okay. Moshe Rabbeinu or Einstein? I'm not sure.
Skipping Shmuel.
Yeah, that's not, because we don't need Shmuel. Because I said Nevi'im already. I said Nevi'im, we eliminated Nevi'im. The Chiddush of Rabbi Yaakov is that the Chiddush of Rabbi Yaakov is by Shlomo Melech. By Shlomo Melech. Even though I definitely understand it, even though I can ask kashas on it, I don't think it's that important. The reason why Rabbi Yaakov took on as an absolute axiomatic statement that Chazal did not know, quotes, nuclear physics, is because Mendeleev's periodic table of elements is a modern conception. And everything in modern medicine and physics is all based on that. Nukuda. And it's not, Rabbi Yaakov didn't feel that there's any proof that Chazal were aware of that. And I say, I like step back. I actually heard this story. Let's see. I tell you exactly what it was, but it's not so important.
He was kind of wrong.
What? He was what?
Mendeleev, like, made a lot of mistakes.
Okay, there could be. There's a little shana. That's not the point. The point is the concept of table of elements. The concept of table of elements is a absolutely, new era to science. I mean, okay, yes and no, it's a little more complicated than that, but it's very, very new in terms of medicine, in terms of chemistry, in terms of all these completely changed because of a proper understanding of what's the world really made out of. Okay? Fine. But the point's like this. And I had this discussion in the original Slifkin controversies, which are, it feels to me like 10 years ago already. But it's not that important. But it sort of feels like about 10 years ago.
Slifkin controversies.
That's right. He wrote, Nathan Slifkin wrote a number of books on Torah and science. He considered himself a big expert in it. People in the Slifkin controversy, people in the yeshiva world, both in Israel and in America, felt very threatened by the statement to say by someone proposing that Chazal/Rishonim may not have been aware of whatever scientific facts they were or were not aware of. Now, thinking about it, it's actually interesting. A little before that, I actually said this story with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky over somewhere when I was a much fresher speaker and not as experienced, and I got quite radical reaction. So, I mean, of course, it wasn't in a place like Charles Shraga, it was in a place, a very yeshivish place. Some of the guys didn't believe it, I don't believe the story's true, there's no way, So I came up with the following statement afterwards. And it was sort of like this. We feel threatened, or we may feel threatened, by a statement saying that Einstein knew more about science than the Chazon Ish. Some people will feel very threatened by that. But I ask people, and I've asked many people, and this is a very not nice trick question, which is, who knew more about Kishuv? Who knew more about Kishuv? We talked about this. Kishuv, black magic. Shlomo HaMelech or Bilam? Shlomo did, but Shama did. It's a Mefurish Midrash. It's a Midrash Mefurish. It happens to be Mefurish and a Midrash, but, and you guys all like, I sort of tipped you off already, but people don't feel threatened by that statement. And the reason why is because we do treat science as, we do accept science as real, and even people who claim to think that Kishuv is real don't really believe it's real. Okay, sort of like this though. This is what I want to, now I want to synopsize and come down to the core of the issues like this. The Parshiyas HaChachma in Mishlei, there are two or three or maybe even four places where Chachma is speaking. And I believe we quoted one of them a couple of weeks ago. Chachma's talking about how important it is, da 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 da. And it is without exception identified. It's not Stam Chachma, it's Chachma Satara. And the axiomatic understanding of Torah in Chachma internally in Torah, pre-modern era, without a question, is that Torah is the epitome of all Chachma. That is the question. So now, again, I stated, and I stand by it, I quote Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, I don't think I have to do more than that. Chazal did not know astrophysics, okay? They did not know astrophysics. They did know a lot about the parts of science which are directly related to Torah, directly pertinent to Torah. There's no question that Chazal had absolutely accurate information, and there's no question that that was part of what was given over to Moshe at Sinai. Those questions, that is obvious. In other words, you understand that Kiddush HaChodesh is dependent on understanding how the moon and the sun, or you know, how we view them from the earth. And you cannot understand that by definition without having that information. And there's no question that information was given down. And of course, there's a very famous, famous story with the Chazon Ish. You know the very famous story of the Chazon Ish? I just saw someone show me a copy of the letter the Chazon Ish wrote, which I assume is what? With the brain surgery? Brain surgery?
Weinberg just
spoke about it. Okay, a very famous story. I actually met the person who, I mean, that's what they say, that this is the person who was operated on. You know the story? You hear the story? Okay, the story goes that a kid had a brain tumor and doctors couldn't figure out how to operate without turning him into a vegetable. So the parents were religious, they went to the Chazon Ish, they brought him all the case history, and the Chazon Ish made a diagram and said, here's how you're supposed to do it. Cut like da 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 da. So the professor, they brought it back to the professor, and whether it was Hebrew U or Beilinson or wherever it was in Tel Aviv, and he looked and said, yeah, definitely the solution, no question. But I don't get it. How did this rabbi figure it out if I couldn't figure it out? So the story stated, this is how I saw it. I'm telling you how I've seen the story. And so he went to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish's answer is very simple. He says, I learned Hilchos Treves Be'iyun, and therefore I know which parts of the brain you can touch and which parts you can't touch. Yeah, that's the way I saw the story. And the Chazon Ish himself was explaining the story. It's not, you know, people want to like superimpose all sorts of things and this, that, and the next. But I've seen people who want to try to propose. The Chazon Ish did know Kabbalah for the records. For the records, he didn't, even though you don't see it in the Svarim. I know, whatever. An old Chavrusa of mine's grandfather was a Chavrusa of the Stein, whatever. It's a long story with a lot of cute details. But the Chazon Ish wants him a Kabbalah. But this has nothing to do with Kabbalah at all. And that's what the Chazon Ish got from Kabbalah. He got it from Nigla. He got it from the fact that he understood what Treifa is. That's all he said explicitly. You don't have to come on to all sorts of funny things. Here's how I look at it, though. Whatever is really important for man to live life, that says in turn. If you think that astrophysics and nuclear physics, etc., are very important, then you're going to have to insist that it's somewhere in Torah. I personally don't think they're that important for man. If we want to talk about what man is and what man needs to do in Olam Hazeh and similar to Rav Eisenstein Shmuzin this week and last week, man search for meaning, all these modern inventions, and I'm not, I've got a smartphone in my pocket, and not that I don't enjoy playing with them and enjoying them. I didn't say that. But they're not intrinsic into what we are. And whatever's really important, what's ever really important, that it does say in Torah. And the parts of Torah which speak about that are going to be, by definition, accurate. And want to just to conclude for the evening is that the one of the deep principles of Torah is that human action is the most definitive part of our existence, of our not only see there's search for meaning, and that's sort of in your mind. But what but the Torah holds axiomatically that what does the most for a person is what he actually does. It's very nice to talk, and not that thought and talk, etc., doesn't have importance. It has importance. And it can amplify my action to a very great extent. But the end of the day is the action is the key. And that's why the Torah is ki'ilu, utterly obsessed by details and actions. And that's Shulchan Aruch from the beginning till the end. Do it like this, but not exactly like this, like this. Like this, but like this. Why? Why so many details? And the answer is action is what defines us more than anything else. And that's why the Torah is so intent on that. So I guess let's summarize very, very briefly. Very briefly the whole shmuz of Emunas Chachamim, Torah and science. The shmuz is, the idea here is that we have a flow. We have a flow of Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu down through the Doros, through the Shas, etc., etc. Straight, it's the same methodology. When we're attached to methodology, we're attached to the vitality of the Jewish people. And what was given over in that Masorah, as I say, is whatever is really important for man in his search for meaning for life and living in Olam Hazeh. Fine. I'd come for that, guys.